stupid.
Accessing. BFBS Multimedia.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of BFBS Multimedia. We're your user-friendly guide to technology, the web, the world of computing. We're broadcast around the world on the BFBS Forces Radio Network, and we're also available as a podcast for your MP3 player of choice. I'm Mark Phillips. Dave Raven's with me as well.
Yes, and we're doing this programme not in our usual location, but we're doing it from Meeting Room 2A in Dennis Publishing. We have to gather together the great and the good of the computing and IT business, the people who've seen it all happen and are going to talk about really the year we've had and the year we're looking ahead to.
Indeed, and first off I'd like to welcome Nick Rawlinson, who's the editor of Mac User Magazine.
Hello.
It's been a very interesting year for Macs and Apple in particular. Next to him is Gareth Ogden, the editor of Custom PC.
Hello.
And finally, a regular voice on the airwaves of BFBS and indeed on multimedia, Paul Trotter, news and features editor of PC Pro.
Hello, how are you both?
We're good. It's nice to be out of that little tiny room that we normally record in, isn't
Absolutely. We'll have to do it here every week, won't we? Month.
Good idea. It's been a year, really, which we've seen lots of changes, lots of new things have come out. Let's just have a quickly go around the three of you. And as Mark mentioned, Nick, it's been a good year for the Mac, and not just in iPods and things. What sort of year has it been for you in terms of Mac user?
Well, iPod, as you say, has been the big thing this year. We've had two big releases, which is the one that finally does video, which we've been waiting for about, well, 2-3 years now. And the Nano, which replaced the rather chunky, not-so-nice-looking iPod Mini. So we're all very happy about that. But away from the music players, the big thing was the Mac Mini. Now, this was a computer that people said Apple would never ever do because they're always very devoted to the high-end market. But the Mac Mini, it's about the size of a biscuit tin, sort of 8-inch square. It's got a DVD drive in there, enough memory to do what you want to do, although you can upgrade it if you're desperate, and that involves sticking a palette knife in it, unfortunately. A fairly sort of middle-of-the-range processor. Nothing's really very special about this machine, apart from the price, which is £349, which, as far as Apple hardware is concerned, is an absolute bargain.
But has it improved Mac's market share?
Too early to say at the moment. Desktop-wise, they're still around about 4% if you listen to the optimistic figures, which are the ones I like, because obviously more people using Macs means more readers. Laptop-wise, the even more optimistic people say 8%. I'd put it probably around about the 4% that people are saying for desktops. That's obviously worldwide. In the UK, it's a little bit different, but they are doing very well in America.
When you say different, do you mean higher or lower?
Slightly lower in the UK than in the US at the moment, but as far as Europe's concerned, Britain is the top, and we're seeing sort of a lot of evidence of Apple actually listening to what's happening over this side of the Atlantic, and they are moving a lot of their operations out of France and into the UK, so it's a very good time for us.
How much, if people maybe they've got an iPod and they think, I like it, I like the way it works, I like iTunes, and want to investigate further, do you think that's actually creating brand and selling through to the Mac Minis and to the notebooks and so on and so forth?
Well, people are talking about the halo effect, where people are buying, as you say, an iPod and they're going on to buy something else made by Apple. And I think there is some truth in that, but not all the truth that people want there to be. Let's not forget, the iPod was originally designed just to work on a Mac, nothing else. It was going to sell the iMac for Apple. That didn't work. People ended up not buying it simply because there was no iTunes to use on a PC. So in the end, they had to release iTunes on a PC. Then, of course, there was PC versions of the iPod. And, of course, now, as we know, the iPod is the big success it is because it runs on Windows.
What about, Paul, in PC Pro magazine, has there been a push towards covering more of the Mac business?
Well, we're very interested in the Mac business and the kind of design aspects of it. And in fact, the Mac Mini is kind of, from that, we've had a similar product from AOpen, which kind of copies that. I think it's slightly smaller, isn't it, Nick?
Very slightly smaller, yes.
But yes, yeah, so I think the PC market in general has kind of cottoned on to the design that Apple has brought into the IT industry and trying to mimic that. So we are covering that more. And you could not ignore the iPod. It's the music player of choice.
What about a custom PC, which presumably are the people who actually actively take a choice in building their own PC? Are you having to sort of reflect what's happening in the Mac marketplace?
Not really. With custom, it's always been about look, or as much about look as performance. And the Mac has definitely influenced what component manufacturers have been doing the past year, certainly for case design. That's where the AOpen XC Cube Mini comes in as well. But a lot of PC cases, or some PC cases, have mimicked Apple's design as well. But a lot have gone completely differently. And then that's actually one of the big changes in the sort of custom PC market, the enthusiast market, is that the designs that are coming out of Taiwan and China and America are not just kind of copying Mac anymore and just kind of like adding lights and just frivolous extras. They're actually creating genuinely good looking products now, which are different as well.
Because we're going through a whole change under the bonnet, it's quite likely there's been a lot of talk, and we're starting to finally see things based around what's called the BTX motherboard design, which is a whole new design. They're moving bits on the motherboard about, so where the power supply would have sat in your machine, it's moving somewhere different, and the processor moves somewhere different. I assume that's to do all with the cooling, but is that also going to have a knock-on effect on the design of the actual the look of the machine?
It hasn't done. BTX actually hasn't taken off at all, really. It's purely really driven by Intel, because Intel has very hot running chips, which is something it's going to sort out next year. BTX really just doesn't exist in the market at the moment, although the cases and designs do. What manufacturers have done is taken the cue from BTX and changed the way the components are laid out inside normal ATX cases to basically do the same thing. So they're basically doing the same thing with the different cooling paths and that kind of thing. But then no one's really taken on BTX yet. That again may come next year.
Let's stay with you, Gareth. For you, 2005, high spots, low spots. What are they? Good things and bad things you look back on?
It's been quite a good year for hardware. If you're a PC enthusiast, you're into performance components. There's been dual core CPUs, so basically dual processor but in one CPU. Theoretically this should mean you can do more, but the software isn't really there yet, but it doesn't really stop the enthusiasts going for it, just because the simple fact that you've got two processors rather than one. So dual core, and that'll be a big thing next year as well. Graphics has moved on a lot. The good thing about graphics, 3D graphics and games, is that whereas last year there were good 3D graphics products, there weren't the games to show them off. This year, or particularly now at this Christmas, there are a lot of games, Fear, Need for Speed Most Wanted, Quake 4, that really do make use of the hardware, and that's partly driven by the fact that the developers are tuning up for Xbox and PlayStation.
I was going to say, are people still playing games on the PC in the same number with things like PSP and Xbox?
They're nowhere near in the same number probably as the consoles, in terms of single player experience anyway. Where the PC has always been strong and probably will continue to be strong, although the Xbox is moving into that sort of area as well, is online gaming, particularly multiplayer role-playing games, first-person shooters like Counter-Strike Source. These are still huge, millions of subscribers to multiplayer role-playing games.
You mentioned the Xbox 360 and Paul Trotter. Is there? We're now starting to see PCs that are trying to do everything in the one box, aren't we? And that's something that's really come across this year. We built one at the start of the year here on the show, and it's a multimedia PC. That the idea is that it's good enough. You can play games, you can record and play back television, you can watch DVDs, you can surf the net, you can do pretty much everything all in the one box. And that seems to be a real growth area in the past 12 months.
Yeah, very much so. The likes of Microsoft and Intel have been trying to get into our living rooms, haven't they? And that's very much been the basis of Microsoft's Windows Media Center push. And the functionality in that is going to be in the next version of Vista, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the show. Intel also, the beginning of next year, is going to be bringing out a new brand called Vive, which is all about moving into our living room. And the functionality and the products are there to be able to do that, but it really comes down to people's choice. I think enthusiasts will like to put their PC there, but a lot of other users are quite used to using their DVD and their home stereo, and there's a little bit of a fear factor in terms of putting your PC right in the middle of it, when PCs have traditionally been associated with problems and crashing and viruses.
And still are, I have to say. No matter how good your PC is, sooner or later it does seem to fall over, unless you do nothing with it whatsoever. As soon as you start loading new software, sooner or later something goes kaput on it, in my experience, and I like my PCs. I know both you and Gareth mentioned the power of processors, but to me it seems that the Intel chip speed, the need for speed, the race to have the fastest chip on the block, that seems to have slowed down somewhat. Is it because we're reaching some sort of theoretical limit?
I think the applications, certainly you could argue that most PCs you buy now could run any application that you reasonably want to use, but of course there is an enthusiast market. I don't think most people really need to bother themselves with clock speeds. Certainly not years ago they used to use that as the marketing push, and it wouldn't work now. Dual core will bring something to lots of people that need high-end applications, but to many of us it won't make much of a difference. It will speed things up slightly, but I think the marketing for that needs lots to be desired.
And of course the other news that we haven't yet mentioned with Nick Rawlinson is the fact that Apple are moving over to Intel Core computers.
Indeed, and a lot of people say not before time as well. They've been with the PowerPC chipset for 10 years now, which is the one that was originally built by Motorola and IBM, and I think IBM Motorola's branch of it changed its name to Freescale a little while ago, which is certainly a lot less familiar to a lot of us. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Maybe people are getting less aware of this chip. But also it's the fact that Apple simply couldn't build a fast enough notebook computer. The PowerBook range, which is Apple's prestige range of notebooks, was still stuck with the previous generation of chip, so it's not got the same one that the iMac and the PowerMac's got in it. And really people are saying that this was the ultimate motive for Steve Jobs to ring up literally his friend at Intel and say, look, can you build some chips for us? And we've all got our fingers crossed that January we'll see the first one. The rumours are that it's going to be an iBook. And also the other bit of news about Apple is that they bought up, I think it's about $10 billion worth of flash memory. And people are saying, and again, this is a fingers crossed and let's hope for its situation, but I'm not really holding out so much hope for this one, is that it's going to have a lot of very fast memory in there that will be used as a kind of cache, so it really will boot absolutely instantly. The operating system will not be stored on a hard drive, but could be stored on memory instead.
That's not just for Apple, though. That's being talked about, and I know that's on PCs as well, isn't it? They're now talking about the instant boot machine, which is a great idea.
Absolutely, but it's only Apple that's gone out and bought $10 billion worth of memory that they
yes.
could do it with.
Yes.
So, you know, the likelihood is they could be the first ones to do it. Maybe it's actually just for another iPod, which I think would be very disappointing, but there is always that as well.
Well, you say that, but I think everybody realises that the video iPod, as is at the moment, to me, it's, and to most people I've spoken to, it seems like a stepping stone to another product. It's going, I can't believe there isn't some sort of widescreen version of that where maybe they've turned it around 90 degrees or something. Something like that is going to be coming at some point in the not too distant future.
I think it depends very much on the revenue they can drive through the online store through which they're actually selling the sort of movies and the TV shows you can watch on it. That's $1.98 for each episode at the moment, and quite
that's obviously if you're in the US. I mean,
yes,
a lot of this stuff just simply is not available in the UK.
No, in the UK you can buy the Pixar shorts, which of course Pixar is owned by Steve Jobs, who's the guy who owns the bulk of Apple. And you can buy music videos, which, to be honest, they look fine on an iPod mini, an iPod video. You wouldn't really want to be watching them on your iMac because the quality is not that great. But I think what we're going to see is there will be a better iPod video if the revenue is there from the sales that they're making through the online video store.
You're listening to Multimedia, the end of the year, December edition, where we look back at the year 2005 and shortly look ahead to next year too. And we've got with us Nick Rawlinson, the editor of Mac User, Gareth Ogden, the editor of Custom PC, and Paul Trotter, the regular on the programme, the news and features editor of PC Pro. Let's just stay though with that flash memory, because we've got to take cognizance on Multimedia of the fact that we have an audience, some of whom are power users and others who are really perhaps getting a computer for their first time. And it's always been a bone of contention that when you fire up your machine, it takes up to a minute sometimes before you eventually can start doing anything on it. And this flash memory is going to mean that all of the things are stored and it opens quickly, like your television coming on. Is it going to mean, if I'd address this to all three of you really, that your machine is going to be less prone to being attacked and viruses and things? Is it going to make your machine a bit more robust?
Probably wouldn't make any difference at all to something like that. I mean, there are already a couple of products. They're not flash memory based, but they're based on RAM. They're just standard DIMMs that you'd upgrade your PC with to already store the operating system on, and it's got its own power supply, so it's non-volatile. And the early sort of tests with them have shown that they're not hugely faster because of the overheads of the buses and interfaces like that. I mean, I think it would be something that will happen eventually, but for the PC, because it's like an oil rig, it doesn't turn very fast. It's going to be a long time. I mean, it's more likely to appear on something like the Mac. You can bring out a proprietary product and have the whole thing there.
You know it's going to work across the board.
With the PC, things don't change quite so quickly.
That's what I was going to say. I think there are one or two things being planned for Vista. Again, I keep coming back to that in terms of flash memory.
Now, this is Windows Vista, which is probably what they're now going to call the next version of Windows after Windows XP.
Well, it is, yes. In theory, it's going to be available at the end of 2006, but we all know Microsoft sometimes has some problem hitting those deadlines. So it could be early 2007, and everything's building up to that now. And as I was saying, one of the things they're mentioning is a possibility of using Flash to kind of store most recent applications. So anything you use every day, for example, you know, your Outlook or whatever, every time you load it up, it'll run much quicker. And also, I think you were mentioning there about turning your PC on and off and how long it takes to boot. Microsoft's going to be making a big push to not actually turn your computer off at all. So it's just going into sleep state. So I think the advice at the moment for Vista is just to put it into hibernation so that every time you turn it back on, it'll only take a couple of seconds.
But isn't that, and we've just been talking or hearing in this last month or two about global warming and the saving of energy, and if you leave your television on standby, all those little LEDs add up to 3 power stations or something mad. Isn't the same thing applying to your computer as well if you leave it on standby?
It is, and we've made a big push this year about completely turning PCs off. Because it can cost you, you know, all your IT equipment could, in theory, cost you hundreds of pounds a year to keep running. But there are several different hibernation states. One's called S2, which is the one we recommend, which doesn't actually cost you a lot of money. But PC Pro is actually advising people to turn it off completely to save money. I know Custom PC has some different views on this, as you might imagine.
Why is that, Gareth? Why?
You've got a bit of competition in the Mac, haven't
you? we agree with the sort of sentiments from PC Pro, you know, save the trees and koalas and all that. but with enthusiasts, they do tend to leave, a lot of them tend to leave their PCs on all the time. But there's something we run in the Mag, which is actually for a good cause as well, even though part of it is a competition who's got the fastest PCs. Something called Folding at Home, which is a project run by Stanford University, which is distributed computing program, basically, where you can break down processing work from the university and spread it across people's PCs.
This gives your guys an excuse to run their computer through the night.
And
all those blue LEDs flashing.
And we have quite a large folding team, and I think we're in the top 10 in the world, which is a pretty major achievement. And we have some guys who literally put their entire company's computers on folding for us, processing for us. They probably shouldn't be doing, but they are doing.
This is probably why I could never log on and get my email in the middle of the night from my company.
Possibly.
Paul, your high spots and low spots of the year for you?
Well, it has to be, it's probably applications that have just finally seem to be coming to a head this year with voice over IP. And we talked about music downloading before, but all that's to a degree being driven by higher broadband speeds. I remember this time last year we were talking about encouraging people to upgrade to 2 megabit, but now we've surveyed our readers and most of them are, you know, a large percentage of audio on 2 meg, and now we're looking at 8 megabit and even up to 24. I mean, most people won't be able to get that. But what that means is that over the next year or two, the ISPs are going to have to kind of make a real reason for us to upgrade. Because 1 megabit, I mean, I've only got 1 megabit at home, and that's enough of what I do. So why would you need to upgrade to 8? And the applications we haven't really had this year. But when we get things like movie downloads and TV over the internet, that might actually encourage people to upgrade a bit more.
Which the BBC have just started their TV over the internet, haven't they? So that's probably going to drive the demand forward again.
That's right. I've actually got a subscription to that, but I haven't managed to make it work. I'm having trouble acquiring the licenses to actually watch it, so I've downloaded lots of
leading
things.
Leading edge technology.
Absolutely.
And what's been the bummer of the year for you?
Well, you have to always go back to security threats, don't you? I suppose it's every year, but this year spyware's become massive. Most people would have heard of it and become aware of it, and it's slowing people's PCs down. It's just another security threat.
Can I mention at this point that Nick Rawlinson, the editor of Mac User, is sitting there looking quite smug, if you don't mind me saying so.
But should Nick be so smug? We have been, I say we because I'm a Mac user too, we have been free from viruses for the most part for 15, 20 years, upon the old one appears. Should we always be this sort of relaxed about it, do you think?
No, you should never be relaxed about it, because that's when you fall foul to it. But the Mac is a lot safer generally than Windows-based machines, and I use both, so I'm talking from a fairly agnostic point of view, but it is generally safer because it's got this Unix underpinning, which means it's very difficult for some rogue piece of code to actually install itself without you giving it permission. I mean, as a Mac user, you'll know that pretty much whenever you install anything on your Mac, you have to give your password. Now, unless this rogue piece of code has found a way around that, it's probably not going to be able to install itself, and there's very little chance unless you actively go and install something along the same time as something else. Like maybe there's a, I don't know, a toolbar to go in Safari, which is obviously the web browser on the Mac, that also installs something else in the background. Obviously, that way we can fall foul of it. But I think if you're very careful, you download from very reputable sources, and you only install things that you really understand, you should be okay.
We did a piece on last month's Multimedia of the 10 things you should do before connecting your brand new PC to the internet. This was sort of looking ahead to Christmas and people getting computers. And I got three emails from listeners, both or all of them in IT around the world, saying, yes, great idea, but nobody will do this in practice, you know, because people just want to get on the internet and don't want to send up a second admin account and all the rest of it.
It's something we've been saying on the program. Whenever you get those things saying a security patch is available, do you want to download it? And the majority of people just say, no, do it later, and so consequently leave themselves open to all the problems.
That's true, and this is true on the Mac as it is on Windows. I don't think any of us can be complacent. There's a new security patch came out today, and I have to admit, actually, I did exactly what you just said there, because I was in the middle of a document.
You're in the middle of something.
I didn't have time to reboot, so it's still sitting there waiting for a download. And in fact, I've closed the app that's telling me it's there.
We're two-thirds into the final Multimedia of the year 2005. When we've looked at the year 2005, I think it's probably a good time now, before we give you the results of the competition and tell you who the two winners are who are going to be getting the lovely creative cameras, is now go around the panel and look ahead. Crystal ball. Far more difficult, really, because in the world of technology, you never really know what's coming next. But if we start with Custom PC and Gareth Ogden, the editor of Custom PC, what do you see in your particular sort of field of influence and things coming up in the year 2006?
It's kind of more of the same, really. It's difficult to know what I can talk about without sort of breaching NDAs and so forth. But
that's a non-disclosure
agreement.
Well, okay, without breaching, is there anything which you've seen unsigned and can't talk about, but which was tremendously exciting?
Oh, there will be some good developments next year. I mean, processors will move on again. The bigger problem with that is, again, finding applications to make use of them, but dual core will take off probably more next year than it has this year, partly because Intel is going to release a new processor core, which will be one of the big news of next year, potentially for Intel, which could get them back in the game, at least with enthusiasts who have gone with AMD because they're cooler and they're better for gaming and so forth, better for overclocking in a lot of cases. So that'll be quite interesting to see how that goes. And I think if it does happen, Vista will be as well, and the Vista-based media PCs when they appear. Because I think HDTV, in all spaces in PC and in home entertainment, will again potentially start to get a bit more interest next year. And Vista-based media PCs with H.264 decoding, HDTV decoding on the PC could be quite interesting for enthusiasts, and you know, it could actually make the living room PC concept a bit more exciting.
Paul Trotter, what about you for 2006? If you can whip out your electronic crystal ball.
Well, this is going to be a major release of Microsoft Office, which might not be the most exciting thing in the world, but it's something that most of us have relied upon for years. Now the new version should be out in the first quarter of 2006, and it's going to be a major redesign in terms of the usability aspects, and some of the files and folders and the layout that we've become used to is going to be changed dramatically. So it might take a bit of getting used to. Probably a slightly more exciting, I would say, mobile phone TV. I'm not sure if any of you are interested in that, but a lot of the mobile operators and handset makers have been looking for a killer application for 3G, and maybe this could be it. We've started to see some operators offering that now, and next year I think if these early trials prove successful, that could be something that people are making more use of.
I think the mobile phone companies keep searching for killer apps for 3G, because everything they've brought out so far hasn't been a killer app, hasn't it? It really has been, for the amount of money they paid for it, not a particularly good investment, I suppose.
It is incredible money. I think it's something like 20 £5 billion, was it?
That's right.
About 5 years or so.
And people are still using their phones to make phone calls.
That's right, phones and text messages. So.
Nick, what about you for 2006?
Well, from Gareth's point of view, I'm quite fortunate because Apple never makes us sign NDAs, and that's because they never tell us anything the day it's launched. So I'm going to have to go on guesswork, and I'm going to go back to the Intel machines. We know that's going to happen. That's the only one definite that we've got ahead of us. It's going to be an Intel chip in there. It hopefully will run faster, cooler, and, well, it can't really run quieter because, of course, they're silent already. But there might be a new batch of software that comes out. Obviously, we're going to see have people having to rewrite all their applications to actually run on these new chips. So I guess it's going to be a new Microsoft Office for us as well as for Paul. There's going to be a new Photoshop. There's going to be a new Illustrator. It's all going to happen. But whether it happens in the next 12 months or not is very, very difficult to say.
You're listening to Multimedia here on BFBS, or if you're listening to the podcast, hi. Now, we should really talk about the competition.
We should, but before we do that, we did ask everybody to come along with some ideas for Christmas, and I see you've already not just got the idea, Mark, you've actually got it in your hand. What is it?
It's a network music player, the Squeezebox 3. This was a marvellous device. It's only just come out in the States, and it is the new Squeezebox 3, and basically you plug it into your wireless network, and you can then browse your entire music collection from wherever this is, because there's a little remote for it, and the quality is astounding.
Before we therefore give the results of last month's competition and the two lucky winners, let's go around the table, and for the person, because it's so close to Christmas, it's too late to go out and buy it, but for the geek, really, or the computer user, what would you recommend to get for Christmas? So we'll go around the table, starting with you, Nick, from Mac User.
I'm going to start with the cheap one, actually. It's the USB-powered Air Dance, which are £15. They're from Marks & Spencer's. You can buy them online as well. You basically plug them into your PC or your Mac, it works on both, and you can control the direction with the mouse and then fire it and they shoot off across the office.
Excellent.
A man after my own heart. Excellent. Gareth, for you?
I've got a cheap, frivolous one as well, which I like. It's a USB lava lamp. There's a USB, you can plug pretty much anything into USB, and this is just utterly pointless, but I've got it on my PC. It's kind of nice. It's a miniaturised lava lamp and it does, you know, it just...
Oh, I have to get one.
Glows.
You can tell, ladies and gentlemen, these guys play with everything, have seen everything, so they're going at the other end of the scale. And Paul Trotter, what about you?
Well, I thought I'd be clever and pick something that was cheap and frivolous, but these two have got in there first.
They've done it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember, in fact, Gareth criticising me last year for putting the USB cup warmer into the Christmas gift guide for PC Pro, but there's another one available now, £13, but it's got four, it's a four-port USB hub as well.
Oh, right.
So it's actually useful as well as being
a cup
warmer.
Got a use as well.
Last month on Multimedia, we gave a competition where we're giving away some of the matching pair of the creative new cameras, which are rather, rather special. And all we asked you was, can you tell us why you would want a couple? Because obviously you're going to be separated from your loved one at Christmas. One is going to a complete brigade, and 7th Armour Brigade in Hona, well, at least the wives are back in Hona, and they've got home rats who are looking after them, and the desert rats themselves, they're in Iraq at present, and Captain Tony Sterling came from Hona, and so you are going to be getting a camera to which is going to go to Iraq, to Basra, and a camera's going to Hona in Germany, and we'll be linking you up over Christmas. And the second one goes to Gunnar Agandar. He's a present in Camp Sinbad at BFPO 645, and he would like one for his wife, who's going to be back home in Salisbury, Mrs. Mabel Agandar, and you, congratulations. You haven't given me your first name, but oh yes, you have, Timmy, right at the top. Congratulations, Timmy. One's on its way to you, and one's on its way to your wife, and we'll be guiding you through setting them up, and we'll be doing something special on the Christmas Eve edition of Multimedia, which is going to be extended, and hopefully talking to both Mabel and Timmy and the boys and girls of 7th Armoured Brigade.
So, it's been a very interesting year here on Multimedia. We've done a lot. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to the programme, and hopefully you'll stick with us. I think that one of the most important things that's come along, and the way it's growing exponentially, is just the whole phenomena of podcasting, where we started podcasting about a year ago on the show.
November was our first podcast, yes.
Yeah, so it's just over a year ago. And in that time, the awareness of podcasting, the people that are doing podcasting, and the availability of podcasts in general has just gone up and up and up. And, I mean, we're finding new listeners every month, and that we've got people listening in the outback in Australia and in Los Angeles and all over the place, and say happy Christmas and happy holidays to them. But it really is. It's just this global phenomenon now that anybody can, in effect, put an audio broadcast and even now a video broadcast upload it onto your server, and there you are, and you've become a broadcaster, you've become a TV station or a radio station. And I think this is something we're going to see more and more of over the next 12 months.
We live in exciting times. Wherever you're listening to multimedia in the world, whether it's on FM or as a listen again or as a podcast, downloadable from iTunes, we hope you have an excellent Christmas and can join us for the January edition of Multimedia. But from Nick Rawlinson, the editor of Mac User, Gareth Ogden, the editor of Custom PC, Paul Trotter, the news and features editor of PC Pro Magazine, and Mark Phillips and myself, have a great Christmas. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.